This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're on Joy 94.9 with Dano and Mason, but not really because it's Lee Casey in the hot seat this afternoon. Sitting next to Lee and pretty much directly in front of me is Jackie Dowdy, who's the curator of an exhibition at the Potter Museum of Art running currently. It's called State of the Union. It explores the relationship between art and the labour movement through a bunch of different types of stuff. Jackie, welcome to Joy 94.9.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We were going to have you last week and you got yourself involved in a tussle.
I did. My car got hit by a car. I didn't literally get hit by a car.
So. When come the self-driving generation, that's going to get nasty, isn't it?
I know.
Were you hurt? Are you all right?
No, I'm okay. Thank you for asking.
Terribly inconvenient to reshed.
Very inconvenient.
No, we were really worried about it last week, so I'm glad to see that you're up and
you're very sweet.
Up and curating things again.
Yes.
When you tell people in a lift or at a party what you do for a living, what do you say? Do people get confused by?
I think people are confused about what curators do because it's so much more than just choosing the artworks that are in a show. There's a heck of a lot of logistics. It is basically project management. But I think people picture you just sitting there guarding the artworks. I have an uncle whose ongoing joke is that he visited my gallery once and there were 5 paintings and 5 staff members and that it was 1 per artwork.
So yeah.
There's a bit more to it than that. So we do come up with the ideas for shows and we select the artists and select the artworks, but then it comes down to the nuts and bolts of, well, how do you get those artworks into the building? Freight. Do you have enough money to? How do you raise the money if you don't? All of those sorts of project management issues.
Because, of course, Potter is part of the Melbourne University. Is that where your funding comes from exclusively?
Not exclusively. So we get core funding from the university and then for a special project we can get funding from, say, the state government or the federal government. This exhibition was funded by the City of Melbourne and by Creative Victoria, and also a bunch of unions very kindly sponsored us. So the ACTU did and the NTEU, the Education Union.
It must be a better collective term for unions than a bunch, like a quarrel of trade unionists.
Perfect. Even better than a gaggle.
A bitch of unions.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. So tell us about the State of the Union. So evidently it's all about imagery from the labour movement in Australia specifically?
Mostly. There's a few international works just to give people a broader context for the Australian work. But it started out it was going to be a contemporary art show. And so there was one work in particular that inspired me that looks at female factory workers in South Korea. And I saw it at the Venice Biennale a few years ago and was sitting in the middle of the gallery crying, which is not normally what I do when I visit a museum, but I was so touched by these women's stories. It's a really powerful work. So that is in the show, and that's often how my shows develop. There's one work that really affects me and I start seeing that subject everywhere and the show begins to build. But as I was researching contemporary works in Australia, I realised there were 2 historical periods in Australia where it wasn't just about artists looking at unions as a subject matter for an artwork. They were actually embedded within the union movement, so they were genuine collaborations and partnerships between artists and trade unions. So I became quite fascinated by this. And so the show, in addition to contemporary artworks, looks at historical art from the 30s, 40s and 50s, that social realist period, and the 70s and the 80s, when there was a funding program that was jointly run by the Australia Council, an arts funding body, and the ACTU. So a real partnership between those 2 worlds that funded artists to make artworks to do with working culture, often within workplaces or within trade unions.
Yeah, I guess you'd have 3 big waves which represent the labour movement, like the swing back to the left in politics in Australia, particularly that 70s, late 70s.
Yeah, well, that funding definitely came out of the Whitlam era. Mm.
So I was thinking when I first saw this that this is going to be about political slogans and propaganda, but it's beyond that, isn't it? Although that's the fun
There's
bit.
There's definitely a bit of that. So the work ranges from quite abstract conceptual art through to propaganda, agitprop, and everything in between. There's a real range of materials and work that was created for public context and wasn't really seen as art, and then work that was created for the gallery and is just high art. So that divide between popular culture and high art is a sub-theme in the show.
Is this something that's now not defunct because it exists, but is it something that is still a method of art? Like, is it, are we still creating artworks that would be featured in this?
Yeah, definitely. So I would say about half of the show is contemporary art, and it's artists who are looking at the topic of trade unions. But also there's a group of artists in the show, well, a few representatives of a group called the Workers' Art Collective, one of whom is Sam Wallman. And he did a work recently looking at the intersection between working culture and the University of Melbourne and students. And he's a political cartoonist as well as an artist. He's based out of Trades Hall. So an example of the way creative practitioners are making work that can be seen as art but is also embedded in the trade union context and is a form of activism as much as it is a form of art.
Mm. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Jackie Doughty, who's the curator of State of the Union at Potter Museum of Art, running currently. It's already kicked off and it runs right through until the 28th of October?
Yes.
Close Mondays. I don't know what you do with your Mondays.
Ah, we just hang out.
Yeah. That's right, you clean your plinths.
We polish the frames of the paintings.
That's right. And it's not all paintings, I know that.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. I'm getting to the good bit. It's Saturday to Sunday, 12 noon to 5 p.m. Who doesn't love a bit of that because there's bars all around there. And Monday closed, but it's free admission.
Yes.
How are you going to make money out of that?
We don't have to. We're not for profit.
There you go.
Yep. Thank you, University of Melbourne.
I was thinking, because you're here, Jackie, sat next to Lee Casey, who's, of course, another... Mm. You're not a curator, but you're an arts type.
Yeah, I'm not a curator.
But I'm at the University of Melbourne.
I, too, am at the University of Melbourne at Science Gallery Melbourne, working in communications.
I would have thought that you guys would all know each other, but you were surprised to run into each other here today.
Wow. It's a massive place, the University of
Melbourne.
It's a very
big place.
One state's biggest employers, in fact.
Is it really?
Yes. Like its own little town.
So you didn't run into each other at the Christmas party?
No.
Shame. State of the Union, do you have, Jacqueline Doughty, your favourite piece? Is it still the Korean work?
I think one of the most spectacular pieces is I was lucky enough to borrow an extraordinary huge banner from 1915. It's so fragile that we're not allowed to hang it anymore. It used to be, when it was originally used, it was carried through the streets, held upright. We have to have it on a flat plinth because every time they unroll it, it crackles a bit and paint falls off. It's that fragile. But it's just a beautiful object, and that's in the very first gallery when you walk in. It's 4 by 4 metres. It's massive, and it really sets the tone for the show.
I think all of that... protest and marching banners and all that stuff. I think that's coming back because of Trump. Mm. I think that some of the funnest times I've had watching Trump is all the banners that the Scots made for him. You know, they're sort of...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all coming back.
Yeah.
And the less manufactured, the better. Like, just sort of paint on calico seems to be the way forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few examples of that from the recent Change the Rules rally, where 100,000 people or more walked through the streets of Melbourne, and this sense that things really have to change, that the industrial relations laws aren't enough to protect workers, that it does fall back to unions to renew the workers' movement. And there's a few banners from that march that were made by farm workers, migrant farm workers up in the Goulburn Valley, and it is just literally painting on canvas.
Does Trades Hall have its own gallerist? Like its own, it would have its own collection, would it not?
It does. It has an amazing collection. There's a number of works in the show that are taken from unions and from boardrooms of unions. And the Meat Workers Union has an incredible collection. If you walk around that, there's ceramics and paintings and all sorts of amazing things on their walls.
Hmm. Yeah. I had this question for a curator. So, you know, when you borrow a work from another gallery, or say from trade, how do you negotiate that? Like, so is that part of your job to go and say, hey, can I have this?
Yes, it's different every scenario. So I had a meeting with someone at the CFMEU and he was talking about their collection and he described a few things and I said to him, I would love to show that. So we found it. It was one of the banners, a banner that was done in 1988 because there's a bit of a revival of that tradition in the 80s. And we found it in the car park of the CFMEU in a plastic tube right next to a car battery on the ground.
It's like when you go to your uncle's place and you say, can I borrow that lawnmower? He's like, yeah, I think it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then
with state galleries, it's more formal. You have to get the director of your organisation to write a letter to the director of their organisation. You have to leave enough time for it to be processed.
And do they charge you?
No.
Wow. I don't understand it. It's like borrowing books from your friends and Like, there's always one or two left on the shelf, isn't there? And they come over at Christmas and they go, hey.
Yeah.
Is that my copy of The Slap? I'm like, no, I think that was... I think I bought that. Yes, the exhibition. Do I call it? Yes, the exhibition is called State of the Union. Jackie Doughty, thanks so much for joining us on Joy 94.9.
Thank you.
What's coming up next? It felt like it was going to end, but then I had another question just popped into my brain.
The next one, our summer show, is Clement Meadmore, The Art of Mid-Century Design. So gorgeous. It's 1950s like furniture.
Quite beautiful.
Lovely.
Yes. Yeah. Have you been to Palm Springs?
No.
It is all that. Yeah. It's the most beautiful place to.
I love a bit of 50s kitsch.
Well, I know that, you know, not for profit, but certainly there need to be some.
Yes, there need to be some perks.
A research trip.
Yeah. No, I was thinking more of Vanuatu, but I can't see how to fit
that
into
the program. It's not great mid-century kind of.
No.
Still work on that. Yep. Give it a little spin, maybe a stopover in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
The exhibition is open at the Potter Museum of Art. That's the Melbourne Uni campus, not the one at NGV. Importantly, admission is free and it goes right up till Sunday the 28th. What's the website that we can go to and have a look if we need?
Oh, it's complicated. I can never remember it. That's
true. Google it. Thanks, Jackie. You're on Joy 94.9 with Lee Casey, Dee Mason, and everybody else.
Joy.
You're with Dano Mason on Joy 94.9. Dano, of course, and we'll try and see if we can't call her in because she's up in a... I can't say what town she's in because she's a very private person.
Could be cocktail hour where she is, though.
Well, she's not a drinker. Lisa Stormy Daniels, as we call her, around the office. Dano, if you're listening, hi. Of course, I've had to drag in poor Lee Casey.
Hello, Dano.
Hello.
Sorry for tarnishing your reputation.
That's right. Well, you work in the theatre and the arts. So you like a bit of bong, bong, bong. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening the part of Lisa Dan will be played by Lee Casey.
Yeah,
everybody goes,
oh, what a shame.
Isn't that all? Imagine being backstage, ready to go on for your big understudy role, and they make that announcement and the whole crowd goes,
And then half of them walk out.
Yeah. Not the half you want, though, is it, Lee?
No, never is.
Never is. Now, Lee Casey distinguishes herself, because I was speaking to Rachel, our producer, during the week. You can confirm these details, Rachel, or else. And you said, well, I know Lee Casey. And I said, well, she distinguishes herself by two things. She looks exactly like her Bitmoji, and she's shortly to be married in a gay way. Congratulations. Yeah. I'll give you this.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So you and your lovely partner are soon to be married.
Yes, that's right.
And you are my first gay wedding.
I am also my first gay wedding.
So you have not even been to one to do your research?
I have not, no. I've been to many a not gay wedding.
We call them heterosexual unions.
But no, this will be my first and, you know, hopefully the last one that I'm actively involved in.
Yes.
As a bride.
Yes. So just a oncer for you.
Just a oncer.
Well, you're leaving a bit late to cram another. Well, your partner certainly is.
Yeah, that's right. She's not getting any younger, that's for sure.
You're in a relationship with somebody a tiny bit older than you.
I am, that's true.
Going great.
Yeah, it's going very
well. She's all
right.
I do know her. She's tops. So how's it been with the gay wedding? Has there been, you know, you're in the thick of it now, you're a couple of months away.
Yeah.
What's the hardest bit?
Well, I think, you know, early on I was like, oh, this is easy. I mean, I've worked on a lot of events in my time for work.
Just a party.
But as you get deep in, you start to care about details that, you know, you thought you might not, like the thickness of the pen to write the invitations.
what did you go with?
It's not something that I, that I thought I would care about, but...
Did you go with 0.7? Because I had given that some thought.
Well, no, we've now stalled even writing them in order to get the correct pen.
Oh, dear God.
But thanks for the tip, 0.7. I'll look into that.
See what you've done there. What about, so has anybody been shocked and amazed that you are getting gay married?
No, but I do think you get a lot more credibility as a gay wedding. People are extremely excited.
Suppliers, yeah.
Suppliers, guests. Other, you know, hopefully the listeners of this great show. But they do get very excited. I suffer from having a gender neutral first name.
Yes.
So often with the email introductions, Lisa and Lee are getting married, you know, they will assume it's a heterosexual wedding.
And in turn dismiss it.
Yes. And then when I reveal myself in our
and your
meeting,
lady ways.
In my lady ways.
Oh, that Lee.
Yeah. Oh, there's often sort of slight confusion and then, you know, excitement. Overcompensation from suppliers. Yeah.
So you don't even, you can't even play your gay card before you get in there.
Well, you know what? I've just taken to openly saying it is a same-sex wedding.
Oh, right. Mm. Okay.
Because you do also want to rule out any, you know, vendors, as they call them on Pinterest.
Yes.
who, you know, who might be homophobic.
Look, I do some work in the wedding industry. Mm. I try not to, as you know.
And DJ work or?
I'm in fact a graphic designer. So sometimes you, it's like Russian roulette. Sometimes you just end up as one in the barrel and it happens to be a bride. Mm. And I generally say no, Lee, because brides historically are known for not being nice. But two brides just sound shitful.
Well, maybe two brides rule each other out.
Oh, well, yes.
I think that's the theory I'm going with.
I guess because you're, you know, amortizing the pain across two ladies.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, I'm probably more interested in the detail than my fellow bride.
Yes.
But, you know, we all play to our strengths in these situations. Yeah.
That's right. Now, I know that you've got your outfit organised.
I do. It does look it's very divine. Exciting.
And I think I can reveal to the world that we're going for a... There'll be a frock involved and a suit involved.
That's right.
Because I've seen some crazy things.
But not one of those half-half
No. Well, that outfits. Would be a great thing to do.
Yeah, half each. No.
Mm. Now, your partner, I know, has... and I spoke to her at a function recently. Mm. And she
Lucky
seems
you.
To think that she's going to get away with not purchasing a new suit for the wedding.
That is correct, and I'm glad to share this with the listeners because I find that outrageous.
I think all our listeners will find that outrageous. If you're on board 0427JOY949, does a human woman or anybody, human man, should get a new suit and or a new frock for your wedding? Of course you should.
Yeah,
don't
absolutely.
Don't even bother texting and we have the answer, but, you know, but maybe you want to recycle.
Do anyway, yeah.
Your bride's excuse is that I look so good in this, why would I need another one?
Yes, but those who know my bride also know that she believes she looks good in most things.
Yes, that's so true. Which is one of the things we do love most about her. Joy. You're on Joy 94.9 and you can plan your talk topics with precision as much as you like, but then an issue will crop up. And you just got to know the answer and you've got to ask the people. I said to Rachel, do you say H or H? Because I'm confused what's right. Rachel put on her officious voice, producer voice, and said, both are correct. The one is American, one is Australian. Lee Casey said, well, which one, darling? And now you've been Googling it. What is the answer?
The answer is the original pronunciation is H and H has become a variant that's been introduced by the Americans.
Yeah, that's H. got them all over it,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
H.
Hey, H. No. So we shall all say H.
H.
I know that that's what I was taught, but then I was wondering why, because in one of the ads we just had, there's a lot of H's, and I thought maybe it was an Australianism, but it is in fact an American thing and to be derided. Am I right?
You're
Am I right, ladies? Hey, now we're coming up to the news at 5 with Judy Kelly, which is going to be fabulous because she's always got a little something for us. But before that, I just wanted to flag this with you guys because I want to get some feedback from the tenants, I was going to say, because I'm an idiot, from my tenants, from the listeners, Rach, Lee,
Present.
Nicole. Mm-hmm.
We're listening, Lee.
I'm moving house. I'm moving. I've resided south of the river for... Let's just say ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
And I've decided to move myself to the northern suburbs. I didn't realise it was such a big deal, but when I announced it on the Facebook, people went shit for it.
Oh, yeah. Winter is coming, Dee.
Yeah. North of the Wall. I've had lots of comments on it. I want to know. We're going to flesh it out after the news, but I want to know.
Can't wait.
I'm not going to flesh it out after the news. I just realised that I forgot to get the news sting, so I'm going to try and do that thing where you talk and find the news sting at the same time. Lee...
Yes.
You live north.
I do. I do live north.
does Rachel.
As does Rachel.
I did. I grew up in the north. In fact, I grew up almost directly on the northern bank of the Yarra River, so literally north of the river.
Actually on the river.
Pretty much.
Basically what I know, guys, is what do I need to do to prepare for northern living? Because I'm used to beaches, you know, there's a certain cafe lifestyle, but I understand for that it's a very different business over there.
That North Face puffer vest you wear is going to have to go.
Where does that go?
Well, that stays south, my friend.
Really? Mm. What about my Lycra leggings? Do you get
They've
that North?
They've got to stay too. You get that North, but not lesbian North.
Really? Okay. Mm. Well, I am in the lesbian North. Is Fairfield the lesbian North?
Yeah, I believe so.
I've got a confession to make.
Go on.
Both me and my partner own matching North Face puffer vests, and we live in lesbian Brunswick.
Wow.
Wow.
There you go.
But are you from somewhere else?
The Alphingtons.
You've got a Canadian vibe about you, though, so it could be, you know, that
I
sort of...
I could pass it off as being foreign.
Lesbian as a second language kind of problem. That's my, you might not know.
NSL.
Not that's right. She's a little NSL.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to know. So what I'm looking for after the news is how do I prepare? How have I got to change my dress? Dear listener, you might not know what I look like. You just need to go to Daniel Mason Facebook page to get an idea. I'm thinking
of
maybe
D
of,
in a barrel. Is
I'm,
a bit
I'm thinking of stop being. I think I can't be blonde, North. Is
you
that right?
You definitely can't be blonde.
No blonde. I can't eat meat. And I've got to chub down a little bit. Like, you can't be a little bit chubby. I think they're all sort of thin and interesting, aren't they?
Well, I'm neither of those things. So
you're a little bit interesting.
Representing. You know. I think you can eat meat, but it's, you know, sort of weird meat.
Weird meats. Good.
Joy.
Hey, Rachel on the airwaves. There's been a number of people texting in with my question that I put to our tenants regarding... what I need to do, having lived for, let's call it, 50 years in the South. Now, I did spend a little bit of university time over North Carlton and whatnot, but not really. My life has been spent in the southern suburbs of Melbourne, currently Elwood, moving myself to Fairfield. There's some changes that I have to make. Obviously, Lee Casey has given me, we can't be rocking blonde hair over there.
Mm.
I think what I'd have to do is, do I just let it go grey? Mousy?
No. Pick a colour.
Yeah, pick a
go
colour.
Go a colour. Solid block colour.
Solid block colour.
Yeah.
Okay. And shall I can just let it go ratty. I don't think people care quite as much about the blonde bob.
No, we don't really care about the blonde bob. We're anti-blonde bob, in fact.
Okay. So just let it go.
Mm.
Mind you, I think most of the good hairdressers are in the North.
Mm. Oh, yeah. No, it's got to be something interesting. Oh, the other thing that you'll find is you'll get like a very exact fade if you want one.
Yeah, okay, right. That's true. That is true.
Yeah, I want an exact fade.
There's a lot of barbers that'll see me.
I feel like I've done short hair. I feel like it's time for a pony.
Oh,
a high pony, maybe, or a side pony.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. In terms of clothing, I understand from Lee that I'm not to be rocking a puffer vest anymore. Am I looking for knits?
Well, all black, obviously.
Obviously.
Not too much colour. You can keep your shirt done right up the top the way you like it.
I like
it.
The top button.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I could
team this. I'm wearing a grey button-down shirt, but I could team this with a black cardigan.
With a black cardigan.
North.
Yeah, for sure.
I just feel if you're going to wear tight black jeans, you have to thin it out a bit. You've got to be a little... Maybe I'll start smoking or taking drugs.
Oh, God.
Is smoking still happening in the North?
No.
But probably more than the South.
Yeah, there's not a lot of smoking down south. I think it's pretty much dead, let's be honest.
Mm.
Tibetan prayer flags, tick. Now, you had a good point, Lee, which is regarding what I eat.
Yeah, I think you need to develop a food intolerance before moving north. Mm-hmm. Probably gluten.
If you can muster gluten.
Yeah, a gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean sensitivity in the way that you can run around saying you're gluten-free for functions and parties, but you can actually just woof down a sausage roll?
When you need it.
Hungover.
Yeah.
Those mornings when your intolerances leave.
That's right. It's like, you know, vegetarians with a side of bacon.
Yeah. Mm. Or our Jewish friends with a side of bacon too. There's a bit of that. Clothing needs to be vintage, am I right?
Yeah, vintage.
Little pattern.
Sort of, you know, some sort of ironic logo.
Yeah. I've got you. Now, I will continue to commute on a bicycle, and, Rachel, you feel that there's a different way to carry your belongings, your goods and chattels when you're in the North?
Yeah, look, it's not a backpacky place, and if you're carrying in a satchel, it kind of swings around to the front on a bike, so you're up for a set of panniers.
Right, so I'm carrying my bits in a satchel, light bits, but my computer and stuff is going... Do we have computers in the North?
Yes, Macs only.
Macs only, yeah. Well, I'm on board, obviously. So, panniers on the bike.
Yeah.
Which I think in the South you'd be poo-pooed for.
Would you?
Yeah. Do I have to go and... Oh, God, I know what's going to happen next. It's going to be a co-working space, isn't it? Yeah.
We've had another text in from this time from Shelley in Abbotsford, and she's saying, welcome to the Nojo, which is apparently short for North of Johnson Street.
Aww.
You can't swing a cat on Turner Street, Victoria Park, and not hit a gay household.
Well, why would you want to?
It is true. Riddled with them over there.
Why would you want to not hit a gay household with a cat? I mean, that's cray.
Joy.
Do you ever have those friends and you're sort of like, you know them. Like, you know them, you know. But you don't really know exactly what they do.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of, and then your friendship's gone so far that you're like, you go, well, like Kath Pope, let's be honest. We all know her. We've known her for years.
If you're listening.
Hi, Popey. She always listens. She likes to text in. Nobody really knows. That's often people in the private enterprise because, like, what do you do? Nobody knows what I do. Nobody cares, if I'm honest. But you have a real job.
But at least you can say, you know, graphic design.
It's easy just to.
It's a trade.
Yeah, it's a good elevator pitch, isn't it? I do graphic design. I need more work. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you don't. You do something fascinating. You work for the University of Melbourne, most specifically in its department of the Science Gallery.
Correct.
Which I thought was just some cockamamie idea that Rose Hiscock came up with, like, you know, let's put science and art together.
No.
But it's actually a worldwide phenomenon.
It sure is. Part of a global network of galleries, in fact, Dee.
Who? Why? Where did this idea come from of putting science and the arts together?
The Irish were the originators of Science Gallery. So Science Gallery Dublin opened 10 years ago. In 2008 as part of Trinity College in Dublin.
So is it always based around a university?
Always attached to a university.
Mm-hmm.
And Science Gallery London will open later this year and Science Gallery Melbourne will open officially in 2020.
Do you know how many total we have?
There will be how many in the world? There will be 8 by 2020.
Wow. So it's a pretty rapidly growing phenomenon.
Yeah.
And do you all share your exhibits?
Well, not so much our exhibits. We share some things. We share the brand. We share the kind of principles and the processes of how to curate an exhibition. And occasionally we share content and exhibitions as well.
I've got to say, I went to see Blood, the exhibit. That was last year, wasn't it?
That yeah.
was extraordinary.
Our first pop-up program.
Yeah, because that's before you've built your big
that's
building,
right,
which is what you're doing
beautiful
now.
Beautiful new gallery.
But Blood was extraordinary and certainly, you know, visceral in the... I got a little bit queasy, if I'm honest.
Yeah, you do tend towards the queasy, though.
Vomiting in my own dishwasher, etc.
story for another
story
time.
Story for another time.
Yeah.
What qualifies something as a science gallery project then?
So we come up with all of our ideas and concepts through a sort of think tank process. So we have two groups. We have a group called our Leonardos who help us curate ideas and topics for future themes. They're amazing people, successful artists such as Patricia Piccinini, scientists, including Nobel Prize winner Peter Doherty, broadcasters, and a bunch of other really super smart, amazing people. And we also have a group of young people called our SciCurious group, and they also talk about the topics that are interesting and important to them.
I thought you were going to pick another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle name for that young group.
No.
I thought that, you know, you could get a...
the Michelangelos.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I guess you didn't.
No, we didn't. No.
Okay.
No. So this year we are exploring the theme of perfection.
Oh, finally.
I know. So, and I guess through exploring perfection, we're also looking at imperfection.
Is this in the human form necessarily or in the sort of in nature?
Both. So we're looking at, there's a number of kind of sub-themes in the exhibition. One is around maths and physics. So maths kind of being, you know, the perfect language of science and the closest we can kind of get to perfection from a scientific perspective. Sounds boring, but it's actually...
No, I think maths is sexy right now.
I think maths is hot right now too.
Mm.
And then we also are looking at utopian worlds from, so environment, biological, etc. And then we're looking at the personal pressures of perfection. So Science Gallery's exhibitions are all for younger people, 15 to 25. And, you know, there are a lot of pressure, particularly in this social media age, for young people to pursue perfection.
So there's something I was reading about your perfection exhibition a little while ago, and I understand, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but there's something that scans your face and suggests whether, does it rate you in terms of its perceived level of perception or its actual perfection? It's got a sort of algorithm of perfection.
Yeah,
plugged in.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a project called Biometric Mirror, which is a research project out of engineering at the University of Melbourne. And they're working with an amazing artist called Lucy McRae to bring this research to life. So it's AI, so an AI algorithm that scans your face and has, I guess, is based on a data set that then gives you a series of rankings, sort of high, medium, or low on...
It's not hotness, though, is it?
Not hotness, no. Although in one version of the work, not in the Science Gallery's version, but in one version it does rate your attractiveness.
Right.
I got average.
Did you, darling?
I did. I thought that was a bit harsh.
Well, don't ask if you don't want to know the answer, as my
great
mother used to say.
Great face for radio. Yeah, that's right.
But what's it based on?
So it's based on data sets. So basically, you use a certain amount of photographs, and then actual humans look at it and go,
"Yeah,
they're this, they're that, they're."
Are they Western white humans though? Like, imagine globally, there's so many different ideas of perfection.
Oh,
and beauty.
Absolutely. And what this project is sort of showing is the flaws in these algorithms, and also the danger of these types of things, and these types of artificial intelligence getting into the wrong hands. So there are some shopping centres at the moment that face scan you when you walk in,
right.
Or when you look at one of those touch screens, and then they start to profile you accordingly on what they think someone that looks like you, D, might want to shop for.
Well, you know what they're going to get is
a puffer jacket.
I guess what they're going to get is the larger version of me. You know, when you're accidentally maybe on the toilet or just sitting down quietly by yourself and you accidentally turn your camera around and take a photo of your own face.
I know, it's always horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like when you are having your hair cut.
Yeah.
Why am I ugly at the hairdresser?
Yeah. I don't know, Lee. Well, you're in charge of the algorithms. You tell me. I think it's a bizarre idea, but I mean, the science of it fascinates me. I want to see, I like the technology there. I imagine I've got a little friend who is Asperger, and I can imagine that if you could photograph somebody's face and then have it say to him, she's happy or she's angry at you right now. Although it becomes apparent when you're angry at him pretty quickly. But, you know, that sort of being able to read a face or being able to read emotion, I find that science interesting. Rating people on hotness based on what other people reckon is kind of, I don't know, do you find it dangerous?
It is dangerous, and that's what the project is trying to show, how dangerous these algorithms are. And, you know, Chinese governments now, Chinese police have facial recognition glasses. So as they're walking around the streets, they're profiling people based on their looks, which is pretty frightening, really.
Yeah. Doesn't look good for you and I in China.
No, that's right.
This is not yet open.
No. It opens on the 12th of September.
It does.
And it runs through to the 3rd of November.
4th, maybe even.
Maybe.
Well, 3rd.
We'll see.
You won't know. You won't know by then. You'll be out of your mind with wedding planning by then.
Yeah, that's right. Closes a week before the wedding.
Oh, wow. That'll be quite... why don't you just have the... Because I know the opening night party for this would be great.
It will
bring the wedding forward.
Yeah, that's right.
And have it at that.
I must say, the party will be certainly more people at that than the wedding.
Yeah. Well, will there be scanning software available at the party?
At the wedding? Or
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, instead of a photo booth, they can get their faces scanned.
I don't see any reason why we can't do that. Of course, you can go to melbourne.sciencegallery.com. That's going to confuse the people.
Just Google it.
Google Science Gallery Melbourne. Not only perfection, but you can have a look at, because it's now public knowledge that you're building the new building.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's going to, when are we?
2020, D.
When are we starting on it?
Oh, the build has started.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, is the metro tunnel getting in your way?
No. Oh, well, I mean, there's a lot of construction in Melbourne at the moment, isn't there?
Oh, well, that's right.
Yeah. I think the metro tunnel's getting in everyone's way. But the exciting thing is that once the train station opens, it'll be, you know, right opposite there. Yeah. Our gallery.
So what is bitch, 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 great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's the way Victorians go.
Yeah.
Doesn't Daniel Andrews know it?
Doesn't he?
It's a time of great development. Hey, I'm really interested to hear about the Science Gallery in Melbourne. It's great to finally know what you do for a living. We'll come back after the break and we'll talk about what I do for a living. How fascinating. Or will we?
Joy.
You're on Joy 94.9. You're with Danielle Mason. Well, to be honest, it's a Danielle Mason show, but Lee Casey is in the studio.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Lee Casey. Hey, have you enjoyed your time with Danielle Mason?
I have loved
it. Great when Dano's out of the office. Hi,
isn't
Dano.
It?
I just got a text from her to say she is listening. But she's on the road, so we couldn't really...
Hello, Dano. Apologies for the my hosting.
Co-hosting,
sorry.
Darling.
Yeah, co-hosting.
We call it co-hosting when you're not actually...
In the driver's seat.
Yeah, that's right, touching stuff. Funny, Rachel, we were poring over an article earlier about this new technology, which is very exciting.
It is.
Finally, oh, thank God, finally, they've found a way to make condoms feel like they're not on.
Thank God.
Oh, my God, because that's been worrying me for years.
What a relief.
Oh, my God. Well, luckily, they've got some of the greatest science minds. Like, there's people that have, I'm going to guess men, that have gone to school, then gone to university and got a science degree, and then the government said, here's $1 million. Can you come up with something? Because this is kind of, I can't really feel it. So can you come up with a better condom than this?
This is legitimate. Last night, the New South Wales government announced that it had put $1 million in grant funding from, you know, there was a $10 million pool. So they've put $1 million and they've handed it out to this company that is proposing to make a condom that you can't feel. And that's where we're putting our medical funding.
Yeah.
This is our med tech for the year.
I know that we're running quite up to the wire here, but I want us to come up in the next 8 minutes with a list of 10 things. Just go around the table. I reckon we could do it. 10 things medical science could... address before we spend money on feel-less condoms. I'll go first. I'm cancer. Lee?
Tax-free.
Tax-free.
Tax-free
condom.
Tax-free
that's right.
Condom.
Oh, I hope they don't put GST on those things.
I know. Ridiculous.
I want a feel-free, can't feel it's there tampon.
Yeah.
How about we work on that?
I want a tampon with no GST.
Yeah. That you can't feel.
That you can't feel.
Yeah.
Magic.
Maybe some sort of birth control that doesn't involve shoving something up you or filling you with chemicals to make you cranky.
Yeah, that's right. Male birth control.
Yes, there you go. Well, it's been a shit ton of money coming up with Viagra.
Yeah.
That was a great idea.
Which is, I think,
well, you know, my thing,
tax-free, isn't it?
Well, my thought on that is let's just deal with the erections we've got before we start making new ones.
Exactly.
And that's enoughsies.
I think a reverse Viagra.
Oh, no, I just want to come up with a name for that.
Yeah. Would be good.
Yeah.
Some sort of, you know.
Flasagra.
Yeah. Flasagra.
That's right.
Yeah.
Take this. Well, I think once you've had it, you can't unhave it. You've just got to let it run its course.
Once you've had what?
The Viagra.
Oh, I'm not familiar.
Anyway, tell us how this condom's going to work. Is it a spray-on?
No, it's a condom. Spray-on. They're using a new material called that they're calling hydrogel, and in theory it's also going to provide better STI protection.
Well, there is that, isn't there? And we do quite joke about it, but if anything makes the young chaps more keen to wear one so that they protect themselves, and I'm talking to you, the gay community, as well as our heterosexual friends. You had a very scary stat for me earlier today, Rachel. What's the highest rise in AIDS infection at the moment?
The fastest growing group of people, new infections of HIV, are young women.
Can't believe it.
I know, right? Well, protect yourselves, ladies.
Yeah. Everybody got a little bit lax, didn't they?
They did.
The epidemic, they went, oh, that was yucky. That's gone. Not. Anyway.
And I think a lot of women think it's not that it's a male.
It's not a lady disease.
Yeah, it's a male disease. So
anyone can get it.
You were saying earlier, Lee, because we were talking about, you know, when I was coming out into society in the 90s, let's call it, even though it was the 80s, all the ladies were all up with the dental dams and the gloves and there's all this protection kind of stuff going on. You, not so much.
Not so much. I mean, this feels like quite a personal conversation.
It doesn't matter because people don't know who we are.
Yeah,
it's fine. But that all disappeared
after
a while. But I do remember because that was during my time on earth. And I remember once going to the dentist and he pulled out a dental dam and he's coming towards me with it. I was like, and then I went, dental dam.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me now.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.